To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio. Of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm your host, Laura Wadlin, here with my co-host, Jamie Partridge. Hey, Jamie.
Hey, Laura.
Tonight, our guests are Mike Etera and Leela Schwartz of the Housing Working Group of Portland DSA, the Democratic Socialists of America. Welcome, Mike and Leela.
Hey, nice to be here.
Thank you for having us.
So the opening page of your website, pdxrenterpower.com, says, "The rent is too damn high. Support the Renter's Bill of Rights. We all deserve safe, stable, and affordable housing. We can make it happen." Then it goes on to list the 9-point Renter's Bill of Rights and the campaign to make them law in Portland, Oregon. Why don't you tell us first about the 9 points? Then we'll get into the background and the reasons. So, 9 points, let's go.
Leela, do you want to go?
I can read them all off. Yep.
Right on.
Number one, require 6 months' notice before all rent increases. Number two, mandate relocation assistance when rent increases more than 5%. Number three, protect children and education workers from evictions for late rent during the school year. Number four, protect renters from evictions for late rent during extreme weather events. Number five, cap fees such as pet rent, late fees, laundry fees, and other excessive charges and deposits. Number six, require that code violations be resolved before rent can be increased. Number seven, establish a right to counsel in eviction court. Number eight, demand that local rent control be allowed throughout Oregon. And number nine, link rent to the minimum wage such that all full-time workers can afford a one-bedroom apartment with no more than 30% of their income.
All right. So tell our listeners how the DSA Housing Group came up with these points and your experience knocking doors of apartment buildings.
Well, I might start with that and then Leela can chime in on the experience knocking doors. But we copied a lot of this from our comrades in Tacoma who passed a very similar renter's bill of rights in the fall of 23. The chapter itself, the Portland chapter and the housing working group had just experienced a really bad wipeout on our eviction representation for all campaign. And we were looking to figure out what we'd done wrong. We consulted with our comrades in Tacoma. We started asking renters what issues really were on their minds, and whether these particular reforms that had happened in Tacoma actually were things that they could support. And we just got overwhelming support. We were doing that in the winter of 24. We were going door to door, mostly in Rockwood, in East Portland, poorest precinct. We were actually canvassing in the poorest legislative district in the state, which is House District 50. Got a lot of support. And maybe Leela, maybe you can talk about the experience of knocking doors.
Yeah, a lot of the work we do as the Housing Working Group and DSA is just grassroots organizing stuff like knocking on doors in apartment complexes, especially surrounding our renters' town halls that we've been hosting once per quarter this year. We'll go out, a group of about a dozen of us, and just start knocking on renters' doors throughout the city. And it's some really rewarding canvassing because renters are never reached out to for their opinions, specifically as renters. So a lot of people are happy to talk and definitely need someone to commiserate with, basically, to talk about how their rent is being increased, how their repairs are going ignored. and basically how renters just need help right now. So we have a ton of data from doing this door knocking that informs the work that we do.
And every time I go out, there's some kind of story that just is really compelling. And whether it is elderly people trying to make it on meager retirement and just fearing rent increase, or young workers just like saying, I just talked to some guy this week who said after he gets paid, he has $5 left in his pocket after he pays his bill. This is a young man working at Walmart. His life is really constrained. Everybody's lives are being really squished, is the takeaway that I got from door knocking a lot. We have support. We've had 900 folks sign the Renters Bill of Rights, 900 people that we've canvassed. We've knocked on 2,000 doors. We're making it up a bit as we go, but we feel like we're on the right path, and we say we need as many renters as possible to get involved. And we're trying to make accessible events. We still haven't quite figured that out, but we are working on it, and you only figure that out by trying.
Let's
I
go
wonder.
through the 9 points one by one and help us understand the reasoning behind each one. Why are these so important protections for renters?
If you don't mind, I think that's a great idea, but I'd like to talk about three of the points specifically because they are going to be introduced at City Council. And the point number one, a 6 month notice before rent increase. And number two, mandate relocation assistance when rent increases more than 10, 5%. Right now, there's a ordinance called the relocation ordinance that says if your rent goes up 10% and you can't afford it and you have to move, the landlord has to pay for your moving costs. And those costs are based on the size of your apartment. And what that did is stop any rent increase in the metro area, in the Portland area, that was in excess of 10%. So our goal here is to do what is not permitted fully by Oregon law, which is rent control. So what we feel like mandating relocation assistance, if the rent goes up 5%, will definitely reduce rent increases to below 5%. We feel like that's a material thing we can win for renters right now. And not only that, but it doesn't let itself be attacked as well, the city can't afford it, because all the city has to do is tell the landlords this is the rules of the game. And the third is cap fees such as pet rent, late laundry. These fees are another really egregious way that the rental industry is just gouging people. I don't know, Leela, if you've had any experience running into people talking about fees.
I've had experience paying my own fees. $200 monthly parking fees. I know that's really common in this city. I think the fan favorite when we knock on doors is usually pet rent because everyone feels like that's just especially egregious for landlords to ask for monthly pet rent. And, we've heard crazy over $100 pet rent fees before, and that's a monthly expense that no one can really afford, but you can't exactly say no when you have a pet, right? So that one is definitely something we feel like would have immediate positive benefits for renters if we were able to get it passed. So that's why it's one of our early priorities with, this long list of priorities on our Bill of Rights.
Another thing that came out in our last town hall was that people are paying hundreds of dollars in application fees just to get an apartment. And those are non-refundable.
So these first three are the ones you're bringing to City Council immediately.
Yes. Yes.
Great. And can you briefly go through the other ones?
Yes, we have protect children and education workers from evictions for late rent during the school year. That one is another eviction representation for renters because we know how devastating evictions are to renters when they are experiencing them. And it's especially disruptive to children and school and the education workers who are just trying to provide a stable environment to teach those children in. We've heard stories from teachers who've had students going through an eviction and they have to bus an hour each way to get to school, and then they spend all day asleep because they have to wake up so early to use public transit just to make it to the, you know, the school they were in the last school district they lived in before they were evicted. And that's, you know, to say for a family who was able to get another home, another living situation, let alone families that immediately go into homelessness after being evicted. So we feel like it's a very important thing to take on to try and protect those families and children from eviction during the school year, especially. In a similar vein, we have protect renters from evictions for late rent during extreme weather events. Anyone who's lived in Portland for a while knows that we are experiencing weather patterns that weren't around 20 years ago. We're having heat events like we're experiencing right now of over 100 degrees. We are having ice storms in the winter, and landlords can evict their tenants right now during these extreme events without any repercussion. So we feel like there needs to be some protections in place for those renters. Let's see, we also have require that code violations be resolved before rent can be increased. We feel that some landlords have really neglected their properties, and it is the tenants who pay the price every day with substandard and even dangerous living conditions. So this item would provide repercussions, again, for landlords who are not keeping up to date with their repairs and providing a safe living environment for the people, you know, that they are providing a home for.
If I could just jump in on that point, just to say that one thing that brought out is how the city of Portland is not invested, has not created any kind of infrastructure to protect renters, and whereas it is constantly bending over backwards to facilitate developers. It doesn't even have an office that could really manage that kind of ordinance. And that just shows the priorities, the fact that this council has been run by Portland Metro Chamber for decades.
One of our other items is to establish a right to counsel in eviction court. We know from other cities that have this right that when tenants have a lawyer representing them in eviction court, they are significantly more likely to remain in their current housing. I pulled some recent research from Evicted in Oregon at Portland State University that shows that eviction filings are the highest level they've ever been in Oregon's history right now. And it's particularly bad for Black households. In the past 12 months, the rate in general for renters is 1 in 24 have experienced an eviction filing. But that number skyrockets if you are a Black renter to 1 in 11, which is about 9% of Black renters. Let's see. We also have that we need to demand that local rent control be allowed throughout Oregon. Mike, do you want to talk about rent control?
Sure. So right now there is a law, and if you look up that law, it's hilarious. There's a law that forbids local rent control throughout the state of Oregon. So Portland or Salem or Coos Bay can't pass a rent control ordinance because it's against Oregon state law. And the preamble of that bill is just, I forget the name of the bill. You can look it up, but it starts like, we must help renters by preserving affordability by banning local rent control. I mean, it's Orwellian. And so we need rent control. This is really our goal. And once we get rent control, we need a rent freeze. And we can't do any of that until we get that bill overturned. And we need, so that is like stage two in our work, because we need to start working with the legislature, and we need to start working with people to demand that of their state reps. But we're going to do that. So that's kind of the background, the way I see it.
If you've just tuned in, this is Labor Radio, Portland, Oregon, KBOO. We've been listening to Mike Etera and Leela Schwartz of the Portland DSA Housing Working Group working on the Renter's Bill of Rights. If you find this useful and informative, consider contributing to KBOO. We are a community-supported, non-corporate, listener-sponsored radio station, and we're losing funding, some funding, from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting as the Trump administration attacks public radio. So go to kboo.fm and make a contribution.
You know, the ninth is also a state priority, which is to link our minimum wage to the cost of a one bedroom apartment, so that if you're earning minimum wage, you should be able to pay for an apartment with no more than 30% of your income. Right now, it's way off that. That is not reality. So that is a revolutionary demand that's going to make us all kind of overturn our thinking about housing. We're going to have publicly owned housing, social housing. We're going to have many, many reforms. We're going to have labor law reform so people can get unions. We're going to have a rise in the minimum wage. All that has to happen at once, because the thing is, you can raise rent, you can raise wages, and they'll raise rent. And somewhere on the back end of all that, you'll find that the people who own one corporation also own enormous rental assets. So that's really when we get to position nine, we're really fundamentally changing the dynamic. I know, Jamie, you were involved in some of the work around that, the first attempt to raise the minimum wage to the houseable wage.
Yeah. Oh, and the houseable wage, yes, which is what you're talking about.
Yeah.
The federal standard for affordable housing is that you shouldn't have to pay more than 30% of your income. And currently, half of the renters in this city pay more than 30%, and half of them pay more than 50%. Am I right?
That is what we're finding by knocking on doors. We're not finding anybody who pays 30% on a single person, even folks with really good jobs. So those are our demands.
So this is a program about working class power. And
yeah,
going up against the billionaire class and the millionaire class. And so that kind of brings us to the next question, which is, who is supporting and who is opposing the Renters' Bill of Rights, and what are their reasons?
So I know our esteemed co-chair, Leela, probably has a good list of our supporters and our endorsers.
Yes, we have five city councilors who are Koyama Lane, Murillo, Green, Canal, and Dunphy, who have endorsed the Renters' Bill of Rights. We have over 900 individual endorsers who've signed on, and then we have 19 endorsing organizations. They'll include teacher unions, other education workers, federal employees, tenant unions. We can get you the list if you'd like, the full 19.
Including my union, the
yes,
PCC.
Yes, I was going to say.
Yeah, PCC, Federation of Faculty and Academic Professionals.
You really helped us a lot secure the location for our next town hall.
Yeah, I mean, that really shows the necessity for cross-organizational coalition building for this.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm very proud of that for my union. So, what have you all been doing to build support for the Renter's Bill of Rights and move it into City Hall for a vote?
Yeah, our
So,
goal is to build a renters movement in Portland and show the city council that they cannot continue to ignore 40% of their constituents that are renters. We've had conversations with councillors about how to introduce portions of the Bill of Rights that we know are our priority to help struggling renters right now. We've had two town halls so far, one in District 3 and one in District 2, and our next will be on September 20th, and it's going to focus on Portlanders who live east of 82nd in District 1. It'll be at Portland Community College, the East Campus.
yeah, the Grand Hall and the Southeast Campus off 82nd. Yeah. And what, you know, even before, what we also did in the city council election last year was we did specific renter canvassing for Tiffany Koyama Lane, for Mitch Green, and we also did it for Angelita Murillo and Samir Canal. We went, what we noticed is that, you know, regular canvassing for a lot of reasons talks to frequent voters. And we noticed when we were defeated with the eviction representation for all ballot measure that we never wound up talking to any renters because we were using sort of the traditional canvassing model, which has its, you know, logical reasons. But we know that renters vote far less frequently than homeowners. And so we, when we would canvass for Tiffany or for Mitch, we would identify neighborhoods where we wanted to canvass apartments and have them produce walking lists for us of renters where they took any controls off. So it was just basically anyone who's registered in these apartments we would talk to. We can't quantify whether how that affected their races, but we can say that because we offered to do this and because we had a ready-made platform, we provided for the city council candidates a housing platform that they might not have had time to figure out on their own. So that's the one thing that got their attention enough to say, hey, we're going to introduce this into City Hall. And we're going to continue that methodology where, you know, the more we canvass, the more we do this for our town halls. Well, it also helps us in the general election.
So your website is renter of PDX Renter Power. You want to build renter power beyond this particular campaign, and tell us about that and how it fits with DSA's goal of building working class power and socialism.
We believe in DSA's goal of building working class power. We also know that not everyone can work, but everyone does need somewhere to live. So if you're unable to join or start a labor union, this is another avenue to build grassroots power. It will positively impact your life and your neighbors' lives. It's another entry point to getting involved with a movement that's going to make the world a better place to live in. We know that renters build the character of a city, and we are constantly getting priced out of our homes and forced to move away. So we would like to halt that process and make Portland affordable to live in.
One thing I noticed when I was helping for the city workers and also for the nurses' strike at Providence, when we would chat on the picket line and we would talk about the job issues, but it always seemed to circle back without my prompting to how unaffordable it was to live in the city. So it's part of everybody's struggle, whether they are represented by a union or not. They have a better chance for making more money, but if there's no brakes on what the landlords can do, it's just we're chasing our tail. So this is a component of building worker power. It has to happen through labor unions because labor unions really have the capacity to do, they are organized on the ground. Tenants are not. So building a tenant movement through tenant unions that don't actually exist except for in tiny little enclaves is frustrating. It doesn't work. So two things. We want to create this bigger movement about renter rights that'll provide kind of cover and a mass base for people to do tenant organizing in apartments. And we want to link the struggle to people who are fighting for a new contract and or to organize their job sites. And we've learned how to knock doors and talk to people, which is, I think, kind of basically what you got to do no matter what you're doing if you're in the socialist movement.
Yeah, our organizing principles definitely come from lessons learned for labor organizing.
Can you say more about the connection between protections for renters and the vision of a socialist world? Like, why is this a project specifically of DSA? Why do socialists care about renters' protections and fighting the landlord industry?
I think one, in my mind, and I think maybe Lila can answer it in her own way, but the way I look at it is, when I look at the fight for socialism, I look at who our enemies are, and that is capital. And in the world we live in right now, the huge amounts of capital that are flowing through the planet are being reinvested in property. This is an asset. In the United States, there's not a lot of capital reinvestment in manufacturing to create more jobs for people. But when capitalists, you know, figure out what to do with their surplus value, what they stole from working people, they want to know where to park it. And we've seen this, and this is a planetary situation. We've seen that capital, huge amounts of capital are tied up in housing. And from that point of view, if you look at it from that point of view, a lot of those folks don't care if the housing they own is occupied or not. They'd like it to be occupied, but it's an asset that they can trade. So we're going to have to come up against that if we're fighting for socialism, because our opponents, that's where they're parking their money, particularly in places like the United States and Europe, North America.
It's another way to get people to analyze their own life through class consciousness, too. You're not just someone who's renting an apartment. You are a renter, and you need to demand rights based on that fact. A lot of us are never going to be able to own a home if we keep trending in the direction we're already in. So we need to start fighting for these rights now before we are completely priced out of being able to live.
So how does this fit with the goal of housing as a human right or even social housing?
We're not going to get social housing unless we have a really enraged and mobilized and organized class of people who rent. It's just not going to happen through good ideas. It's going to happen through class struggle. And this begins the class struggle. And it also takes it directly to the landlord class instead of mediated through the state. One thing you'll always notice when people start fighting for rent control, you'll find the landlord industry going, well, no, we shouldn't do that. We'll need more rental assistance, you know. They'll always retreat to that until there's a budget crisis, and then they say, oh, well, we actually can't afford rental assistance. But anything to not have their hands tied. So we're only gonna get the reforms we need, particularly when we get to the point of linking wage to housing. We have to have a mass movement to do that. If we're going to have social housing, we're going to have a mass movement. It isn't just good ideas. Even well-intentioned people will be shuttled off to the side rail to wait until the time is right. You know, so there has to be a crisis. There is a crisis. There really is. And we'd love to be able to demonstrate very concretely to the entire public that there is a serious crisis happening to everybody who's the worker who has to rent.
You mentioned you have a renter's town hall coming up on Saturday, September 20th from 2 to 4 p.m. at PCC Southeast off of 82nd. So tell us more about what's that about and what have past renter's town halls accomplished?
We've had two town halls so far. We've had one in District 3, our second was in District 2, and now we will be going over to District 1, which is kind of the district that is really disenfranchised, and we would really like to have a good turnout of renters at this specific town hall, because we know the renters in this portion of Portland, east of 82nd, really get the short end of the stick constantly, and they would benefit the most from something like the Renter's Bill of Rights. We typically have elected officials come and listen to their constituents' concerns specifically in regards to renting. It would be great to have more show up at this town hall, even if they haven't endorsed the Renter's Bill of Rights. I think it's even more important for the city councilors who have not endorsed to come and listen to renters in their district. We typically have a call to action at the end that's relevant to whatever is going on housing policy-wise at that moment, that the goal is to get renters to join our movement and begin thinking in terms of class consciousness. It would be great if they also joined the DSA Housing Working Group and really joined the movement and helped us knock doors for the next one.
In the last two town halls, we had people testify about their situation, and everyone was just really, it was sometimes very hard to hear the problems people are having. And just that, the fact that people can get together and not suffer through those issues isolated in their apartments, we feel has been a benefit. I think we did some analysis and self-criticism about our last two town halls, and hopefully this next one, we're going to have a much more detailed call to action and how people can get involved. I think a little bit on the line of what we tried to model at the general meeting of DSA general meeting, where we have a packet of information where that go from the simplest action to more complex actions that people can take, and really train people to talk about these issues right in the town hall, so they can take it back to their apartments, because that's what we really need. We need key leaders in different apartment complexes who help us. We have that with some apartment complexes already, but we really need this to be a general rule. And we don't know exactly how to do that, so we're going to experiment.
So you told us a little bit about how our listeners can support your work going forward, whether they are tenants or not tenants. And how, if you have anything more you want to say about that, or specifically how people can reach you to get involved.
We would love your listeners to visit pdxrenterpower.com to see if their labor unions have already endorsed the Renter's Bill of Rights. All of our endorsers are listed on the website, so please check that out. If they're not, we would love to earn their endorsement. You can reach out to us through the website or pdxrenterpower on Instagram. We also have an email. You can reach us at portlanddsahousing@gmail.com. And if you feel moved to endorse the Bill of Rights as an individual, that is also available to you at pdxrenterpower.com.
And DSA Housing Working Group welcomes people, the folks who are in leadership at this moment were people who had never done any of this kind of organizing for have a decent housing working group meeting. We have two per month. One is online and one is in person, and you can find them at by going to the portlanddsa.org website and go to the events calendar, and it will show you when our meetings our schedule, but Lila, when is our next meeting? I forget.
Our next meeting should be.
Right on. So we'll have a lot to, we'll have started canvassing by then, and we'll have a lot to unpack. Our canvassing schedule will be posted as we set it up.
And our next housing working group meeting will be on Thursday, August 28th. I
Yeah.
lied. Just wanted to correct the record
Okay.
with what I said earlier.
Yes, there you go. So if you're listening on KBOO radio, you can still meet us at the housing working group meeting, which is usually pretty fun.
It's a good time.
Yeah.
That wraps it up for this evening's show. We've been listening to Mike Ettera and Leila Schwartz of the Democratic Socialists of America's Housing Working Group talking about the Renters' Bill of Rights campaign. I'm Jamie Partridge with my co-host, Laurel Wadland. This is Labor Radio this Monday and every Monday at 6 p.m. Stay tuned for Prison Pipeline.